Continue with our technical subject matter, which describes the creation of the universe. And we're beginning the sixth chapter today, which is called the Purusha Shukta, Confirmed. We'll be discussing that. But first, I'd like to review the creation as described in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavatam, because we see in the material world that there is no effect without a cause. Everything is caused. There's nothing in existence that does not have a cause. So what is the cause of everything in existence? The fifth chapter was entitled The Cause of All Causes. And in that chapter, Lord Brahma described to Narada that cause of all causes as Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And from the expansions of the expansion of Krishna comes huge Mahavishnu or Karanadakshaya Vishnu. And this form of the Lord, he lies down in what is called he's called the Karanadakshaya Vishnu, and he lies down in the Karana ocean or the causal ocean. And this causal ocean is like a cloud that has settled upon the effulgence of the Lord known as the Brahma Jyoti. And this cloud is the undifferentiated ingredients. They're all there. All the ingredients of matter are there in an undifferentiated formless form. If something could be a formless form, this is what it is. It's all, everything is there in the ingredients, but nothing is formed yet. Very, very, very subtle ingredients. So, by the glance of Mahavishnu upon this cloud, which is called the Mahatattva or Pradhan. Pradhan means the primal or the first ingredient. By the glance of Mahavishnu, the living entities are injected within the womb of the material nature, which is this pradhan, or this great cloud. And along with that, the living entities being injected within the womb of material nature, there is the time element, and the living entities' nature, swabhava, and their karma. This is all placed within the womb of material nature by Lord Karanadakshaya Vishnu. And as soon as that time element enters, and the factor of the living entities, because the living entity, each and every one of us, we're individuals, and there we have life. Life means activity. Life means desiring. We have our individual natures that consist of our individual desires and wantings to do things. So by the force of time, and the individuals in there, the material nature starts to move and form. Because this material nature is for souls who have turned their back on Krishna. Krishna, bhule seji, forgetting Krishna, the jiva, anadya bahimukh, he turns his back on Krishna, atta eva mayatari, and therefore maya gives him samsareta dhuk, the unhappiness of birth and death. So when the living entities are placed within this ignorant position of having turned their back on Krishna, things start to happen. So with the ignorance formed, the very basic ignorance of turning their back on Krishna coming from the Mahatattva is called ahankara. And what does ahankara mean? False ego. Whoever said it. False ego. So there is a false identification of the living entities, because they do not identify themselves with their true nature as Krishna's servant. So from that everything begins. So the undifferentiated Mahatattva first differentiates into the mode of ignorance, passion, and goodness. So from the mode of goodness, interacting with this false ego, impelled by the time factor and the living entities, and ultimately the Ichha Shakti of the Lord, or the desire of the Lord, what is generated is the demigods, the controllers of the material world. Not the exactly the controllers of the material world, but those entities who are powerful because of being empowered by the Lord. They will have specific functions for controlling the way that the universe is operated and how things work in the universe. And then the mind is also generated from the mode of goodness interacting with false ego. Then, from the mode of passion interacting with false ego, then the five working senses, the five knowledge acquiring senses, that will later be used as like parts to be assembled for the individuals according to their karma, according to what they deserve and what they desire. These are assembled along with the intelligence to manipulate the material energy. These are created. And then from the mode of ignorance interacting with the false ego, the gross material elements begin the spiral or cycle of their own creation. So first there is sound, and from sound comes the ether, and then the sense which perceives sound, the ear, is developed. And then gradually, one by one, there is sound, ether, then air, and touch, and the skin, and then form, and then sight, etc. And then the nose, and water, taste, right. Taste isn't with the nose, though, is it?
Water,
thank you. No, Lord Brahma am I. So in this way, the five elements are created, one after another, going from subtle to gross, and the whole creation actually proceeds from subtle to gross, and then all the sense objects are created from subtle to gross, and all the senses are created in the same way. So, at this point, as stated in the 32nd verse of the 5th chapter, the forms of the bodies cannot take place as long as these created parts, namely the elements, the senses, the mind, the modes of nature, are not assembled. So everything, all the parts have been created, and they're more or less waiting to be assembled. But what are they waiting for? The first thing they're waiting for is ultimately the force or the energy of Krishna. Because even though everything may be there, unless it has the potency of God desiring that it occurs, it will not occur. We see this in our lives. We may try to make some arrangement. We may put all the elements together. But unless the desire, the force, the will of Krishna backs up our endeavor, it never occurs. So similarly in the creation, all the parts are assembled, but it is waiting really for the desire of the Lord. So the universe certainly came into being by accepting the primary and secondary causes of creation. Thus all the universes, so then what happens is that the universes emanate from the body of this Karanadaksha Vishnu, this huge body, and they sit like seeds on for 1,000 years on the waters of the causal ocean. And then the Lord of all beings, he enters into each one of them, causing them to be fully animated. So Karanadakshay Vishnu, he takes on the form as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, the second of the Purusha avatars, of the forms of the Lord especially meant for the creation of this world. And he enters, one form of Garbhadakshay Vishnu enters into each and every universe. This is all in preparation for the universes to be created so that the living entities can live within the universe, trying, making their attempt to independently satisfy their desires. So then, the Lord, Mahavishnu, though lying in the causal ocean, he comes out of it. He divides himself as Hiranyagarbha, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and he enters into each universe. And then he assumes the Virata Rupa with thousands of legs, arms, mouths, heads, etc. Now, the next stage, as described, that we heard yesterday, is that the Lord assumes the Virata Rupa, which means the universal form. Now, this is described further in the third canto, and I thought to give us a clearer idea about what the universal form is, because the sixth chapter will deal very much with the universal form. So to give us a clearer idea of what this universal form is, I'm going to read some verses from the third canto. The sixth chapter of the third canto. This is more or less the first. We'll be hearing this before the end of the year, if Krishna allows. This is Maitreya Muni speaking to Vidura. So what happens, I'll give a little prelude to this part. What happens is everything is there. This is before, everything is there, and the demigods are there as well, but they have no ability, the thing isn't combining properly. The universal creation isn't going on. This is before the Lord, as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, enters into the universe. So the demigods, they don't have the power to make the creation go on any further. So they begin to pray. And they offer very wonderful prayers to the Lord. And the last of their prayers, which is the last verse in the fifth chapter of the third canto, is, O Supreme Self, O Lord, please give us, who are created in the beginning of the Mahatattva, the total cosmic energy, your kind directions on how we shall act. Now this is actually the situation of anyone who wants to do anything in the material world. We really need the directions of Krishna for it to be successful. So the demigods, they're acknowledging that. And they are begging, praying to the Lord to help them because they understand they have no ability, independent ability, to proceed with the creation. Kindly award us your perfect knowledge and potency, because you have to know how to do something, and that's the Jnana Shakti, and also you need the Kriya Shakti, the potency to act. Because everyone is proudly thinking, now I'm going to do this, and now I'm going to do that, I'm planning to do that. But we're all completely dependent on Krishna for the knowledge on how to do it, and also the potency to act. And if those are withdrawn, either one of those, we are helpless. But very rarely does a living entity acknowledge its dependence on Krishna. So the demigods continued, we beg you for this, the knowledge and potency, so that we can render you service in the different departments of the subsequent creation, because they were supposed to continue with the creation. Then the beginning of the sixth chapter. There is nothing wanting in the creation of the Lord. All the potencies are there in a dormant state. But unless they are combined by the will of the Lord, nothing can progress. This is all our situations. The suspended progressive work of creation can only be revived by the direction of the Lord. Second verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, then simultaneously, he entered the 23 elements with the goddess Kali. That is, Garbha Daksha Vishnu is entering the elements or the universe with Kali. Kali means time. Kali means time. The time energy enters. So this was we've heard already how this has entered the universe. So he enters each of the elements simultaneously, and with Kali, which is his external energy, who alone amalgamates all the different elements. It's due to the force of time that things start combining. Thus, when the personality of God entered the elements by his energy, all the living entities were enlivened into different activities, just as one is engaged in his work after awakening from sleep. When the 23 principal elements were set in action by the will of the Supreme, the gigantic universal form, or the Vishwarupa body of the Lord, came into existence. So the Lord, in relationship to the Vishwarupa, is more or less the same as the soul in relationship to our body. The soul is composed of a different energy than the body. The soul is spiritual energy, and the body is material energy. So in one sense, our relationship with the body, the soul's relationship with the body, is imaginary. There is no relationship. But on the other hand, one can't say that there is no relationship, because the body, the growth of the body, is resting on the presence of the soul. So it is when Krishna, who is the Paramatma, or the soul of the universe, he enters, his potency enlivens the elements. And just as when the soul enters the body starts growing. And if a body is born with no soul, a dead body, it does not grow. So similarly, it is due to the presence of the Lord. So this gigantic universal form, or the Vishwarupa body of the Lord, came into existence. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. The Vishwarupa, or Virata-rupa, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, which is very much appreciated by the impersonalists, is not an eternal form of the Lord. It is manifested by the supreme will of the Lord after the ingredients of material creation. Lord Krishna exhibited his Virata Rupa or Vishwarupa to Arjuna just to convince the impersonalist that he is the original personality of Godhead. Krishna exhibited his Virata Rupa. It is not that Krishna was exhibited by the Virata Rupa. The Virata Rupa is not therefore an eternal form of the Lord exhibited in the spiritual sky. It is a material manifestation of the Lord. The Archavigraha, or the worshipable deity in the temple, is a similar manifestation of the Lord for neophytes. But in spite of their material touch, such forms of the Lord as the Virata and Archa are all none different from his eternal form as Lord Krishna. So they are none different. The Virata Rupa is a material form of the Lord, but because it's empowered by the Lord, it is not different from him, but yet it is different from him. Text 5. As the Lord, in his plenary portion, entered into the elements of the universal creation, they transformed into the gigantic form in which all the planetary systems and all movable and immovable creations rest. So this huge form comes. Now, remember, the demigods had prayed for the intelligence, the knowledge, and the power to be able to create. And this is Krishna's answer. to their prayers. He enters with his in the feature of time and starts everything moving, and he himself empowers the living entities, and he expands himself into this Virata Rupa form. Here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. The elements of cosmic creation are all matter and have no potency to increase in volume unless entered into by the Lord in his plenary portion. This means that matter does not increase or decrease unless it is spiritually touched. Matter is a product of spirit and increases only by the touch of spirit. The entire cosmic manifestation has not assumed its gigantic form by itself, as wrongly calculated by less intelligent persons. It is not that the universe is just created by the interaction of matter. We never see matter combining with anything and increasing in any way in and of itself. There has to be some life connected to it for it to expand and grow. As long as spirit is within matter, matter can increase as needed. But without spirit, matter stops increasing. Soon as spirit, the touch of spirit, leaves matter, one can see the matter for exactly what it is, as anyone who has seen a dead body can immediately attest to. That as soon as the life leaves that body, it is completely different. What is that life that has left? If we think that the life is the body itself, if we think that which is lovable is the body itself, then why, as soon as the body dies, why is that body suitable to be buried or burnt? No longer lovable. Because it is the soul, the touch of spirit in there, that gives it life, that makes it grow. For example, as long as there is a spiritual consciousness within the material body of a living entity, the body increases to the required size. But a dead material body, which has no spiritual consciousness, stops increasing. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, importance is given to the spiritual consciousness, not the body. The entire cosmic body increased by the same process that we experience in our small bodies. One should not, however, foolishly think that the individual infinitesimal soul is the cause of the gigantic manifestation of the universal form. The universal form is called the Virata Rupa because the Supreme Lord is within it in his plenary portion. So the Lord, as the super soul, enters the universe, and therefore this and he enters the elements, and the universal form grows out. Text 6. The gigantic Virata Purusha, known as the Hiranyamaya, lived for 1,000 celestial years on the water of the universe, and all the living entities lay within him. So we've just heard that. The total energy of the Mahatattva, text 7, and the form of the gigantic Virata Rupa divided himself by himself into the consciousnesses of the living entities, the life of activity and self-identification, which are subdivided into 1, 10, and 3 respectively. The gigantic universal form of the Lord is the first incarnation and plenary portion of the Supersoul. He is the self, with a capital S, of an unlimited number of living entities, and in him rests the aggregate creation, which thus flourishes. So within the universal form of the Lord, everything in this universe exists. That indicates to us that nothing in this world or in the entirety of the universe is separate or independent from the Lord. And it's flourishing, being created, being maintained, and diminishing, because those are the different stages that everything in creation goes through according to the prescriptions given by the Lord. The Supreme Lord is the supersoul of all the demigods entrusted with the task of constructing the cosmic manifestation. Being thus prayed to by the demigods, he thought to himself and thus manifested the gigantic form for their understanding. And a little part of the purport, Prabhupada's purport from that verse. The Lord can reveal himself only to a person who is submissive and who engages in his transcendental loving service. The demigods, controlling the elements and ingredients of universal affairs, prayed to the Lord for guidance, and thus he manifested his gigantic form as he did at the request of Arjuna. So this universal form within it, in some subtle way, everything existed, and in addition, almost like the instruction manual that comes along with a complicated machine, it gave the intelligence, because an instruction manual gives the intelligence on how to operate the machine to those who need to operate it. So similarly, the demigods, by taking their own positions within this universal form, because they were part of the universal form as well, because they were part of the universe, they obtained the instructions, the knowledge, the jnana shakti, the kriya shakti, the ability, because Krishna had entered into this, and by their connecting with this universal form, which was the answer to their prayers, they were given the ability to perform their natural function of pushing on the creation. So now, the universal form in the end of the fifth chapter was very, very summarily described as having different divisions: the upper planets, the lower planets, the middle planets, the Vanashrama system with the Kshatriyas, the Brahmins, the Vaishyas, the Sudras, all the different positions in the material world. They all have their position on the universal form. And by the connection with the universal form and their desire to do service for the Lord, they are given the knowledge and the ability to do that service. So now, because chapter 6 is called the Purusha Sukta confirmed. Now, what is the Purusha Sukta? Because we have to know that before we understand why this chapter, the meaning of this chapter, and what is it confirming? It is confirming the Purusha Sukta. So what is that Purusha Sukta? The Purusha Sukta, Sukta means, it's a sandhi, a Sanskrit combination of two words, su and ukta. Ukta means to speak, and su means auspicious or very nice speech or very, very sweet words. So shuktas are prayers, very sweet prayers that are within the Vedas. So this particular sukta is Purusha Sukta, which comes from the Rig Veda. And this prayer is very, very, very sweet, and it is sung by the demigods at different times when they want to appease the Lord. They go to him and they worship Lord Kiradakshaya Vishnu or Lord Gabadakshaya Vishnu, and they go to the ocean of milk and they pray, and they satisfy him by reciting these prayers. And what these prayers describe is the universal form and how it is the Lord who has expanded to the universal form. It is Lord Garbhadaksha Vishnu or Lord Kiradaksha Vishnu who has expanded himself into this universal form, who is the soul of the universal form. So now we will have our Nittai. He will say two of the verses. And Sahasra Shirsha over there can Moli.
Hariyam Om Sahasra Sirsa Purusha Sahasraksha Sahasrabad sarumim vishvato vritva atta dishtyata sangulam purusa evedagam sarvam yad bhutam yad javavyam udhamrita tat sveshanah yadannena tirohati etavanasya mahima atho jayagam sa purusah Pado seha visrahutani tripada shramitam divi.
Those were the first two verses. So I'm going to read some of the Purusha Shukta in English, because very often we've heard this being chanted, but we don't know what it means. It's about specifically the Lord as the source. It describes the universal form and the Lord's relationship with it. The universe arose from the waters of creation and from the earthly solid elements. From the Supreme Lord arose the Virata Purush. That Virata Purush then began to make the variety of forms in the universe. In this way, the universe was manifested through the Virata Purush. I know that Purusha who shines like the sun. Purusha means person, man. Situated beyond the darkness of the material realm. One who knows this Purusha becomes immortal in this world. There is no other path than this. In this way, the Lord of all creatures, who is unborn, acts within the universe and is born in myriads of forms, because the Lord enters into all the forms of the universe. The wise understand and worship this Lord, who is the source of everything, and they desire to attain the status of Marichi Prajapati. I pay my respects to the effulgent Supreme Brahman, who bestows powers on the devas. So this is what we've heard has happened. The demigods are being empowered by the Lord, who is concerned for the welfare of the devas and who was born before the devas. The demigods, in order to make known the glories of the Lord to the world, standing before the Lord, proclaimed, the devas themselves come under the control of the seeker of Brahman, the person who realizes the true nature of God. Ri and Lakshmi are your consorts, they're praying to the Purusha. Day and night time are your sides. The innumerable glittering constellations are your form. The asvins appearing at dawn are your open mouth. So they're describing how everything in creation fits as one aspect or another within the universal form of the Lord. Please grant us our desires for self-realization. Grant us that facility in the material world. Grant us the supreme goal. The past, present, and future universes are manifestations of the Lord's power, but the Lord Himself is much greater. All the living beings of the universe are but one quarter portion, and the eternal nature in the spiritual sky exists in three quarters portion. Everything that exists in the unlimited universe is not only this universe. This is only one quarter, ekapad vibhuti, of the totality of creation. The three quarters portion of the Lord transcend the material portion. The Lord in the one quarter portion manifests the universe again as He had done repeatedly before. The Lord of the one quarter portion began the work of creation by going all around, taking the form of all animate and inanimate objects. From that Lord, the Virata or universe was born. And in that Virata Purusha, Paramatma of the universe was born. Being born, the Virata Purusha grew and produced the earth and the bodies for the jivas. The devas, being the first beings manifest, performed a mental sacrifice. Now this mental sacrifice that the devas want to perform, the demigods want to perform, is the subject matter of the second part of this chapter. How they perform a sacrifice. to complete the creation. Using the Virata Purusha, the raw ingredients of the material world as the offering. Spring was the ghee, summer was the fuel wood, and autumn was the offering. In this sacrifice, the kusha grass blades strewn around the fire for protection from rakshasas were 7, and the fuel sticks were 21. The devas who were performing the mental sacrifice tied the Virata Purusha to offer him into the fire, just like an animal. The devas, the sadhyas, the rishis, they placed the Virata Purusha, the first being of the universe, on kusha and sprinkled him with water for purification. In this way, they conducted the mental sacrifice using the Virata Purusha. From that sacrifice, where everything in the universe was sacrificed, everything in the universe was offered to the Lord, yogurt and ghee, all nourishing foods were produced. It created the animals of the air, fire, and villages. From that sacrifice, the face became the brahmanas of the Virata Purusha. The 2 arms were made into kshatriyas. The thighs of the Virata Purusha became the vaishyas. So in this way, it describes how the Virata Purusha actually manifests into the physical elements of the material world. But these things, these elements coming from the Virata Purusha, the Virata Rupa, are ultimately coming from the Lord, the Supreme Lord, who is the source of everything. And that specifically is what is going to be confirmed within this chapter. How everything in the universe is ultimately coming from the Lord. It is empowered by the Lord. The demigods themselves are empowered by the Lord to further the creation. But ultimately, the cause of all causes, the ultimate creation, creator, is God, Krishna. So, that is what the Purusha Sukta is, and this chapter will confirm this information that of this Sukta, where the demigods are praying this to the Lord. So we'll begin the chapter. So Lord Brahma, he's reciting here prayers. So he says, the mouth of the Virata Purusha, the universal form of the Lord, is the generating center of the voice. And the controlling deity is fire. His skin and 6 other layers are the generating centers of the Vedic hymns. So in this way, Lord Brahma begins praying and explaining to Narada about the Virata Purusha and its relationship with everything, or rather the relationship of everything within the material world to this Virata Purusha. The nostrils have a position. The nostrils and the Virata Purusha, they are the centers of our breathing. His smelling allows us to smell. The elements of the Virata Rupa that have medicinal herbs, they give the medicinal herbs in this world the potency. His eyes, because of the eyes of the Virata Purusha, like the sun and the moon, they give us the ability to see. Showing again that everything in this world has its dependency upon the Virata Purusha and ultimately the dependency upon the Lord. We may be very proud of our eyesight, but how and what can we see without the potency of the sun? Even the electricity is based on the potency of the sun in one form or another, even some type of a fossil fuel, where the energy of the sun is stored within oil or in wood. So our sight is dependent on the Lord. This is the point. And everything is coming from Him. The hairs on His body of the Virata Purusha are the causes of all vegetation, particularly of those trees which are required as ingredients for sacrifice. His nails are the breeding ground of electricity, stones, and iron ore. The Lord's arms are the productive fields for the great demigods and other leaders of the living entities who protect the general mass. So we'll read Prabhupada's purport on this. Let's see what he says about the Virata Purusha. This important verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam is corroborated and nicely explained in the Bhagavad Gita as follows. Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam srimad urjatam eva va tatat eva avagatschatam mama tejo angsa sambhava ataiva bahunaitena kim jatena tavarjana vistabhyaham idam kritsnam ekam sena stito jagat. There are many powerful kings, leaders, learned scholars, scientists, artists, engineers, inventors, excavators, archaeologists, industrialists, politicians, economists, business magnates, and many more powerful deities or demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Chandra, Surya, Varuna, and Marut, who are all protecting the interest of the universal affairs of maintenance in different positions. And all of them are different powerful parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna is the father of all living entities who are placed in different high and low positions according to their desires or aspirations. Some of them, as particularly mentioned above, are specifically endowed with powers by the will of the Lord. A sane person must know for certain that a living being, however powerful he may be, is neither absolute nor independent. That means we should be a little humble. All living beings must accept the origin of their specific power as mentioned in this verse. And if they act accordingly, then simply by discharging their respective occupational duties, whatever powers they have, they can achieve the highest perfection of life, namely eternal life, complete knowledge, and inexhaustible blessings. As long as the powerful men of the world do not accept the origin of their respective powers, being, namely, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the actions of Maya, illusion, will continue to act. The actions of Maya are such that a powerful person, misled by the illusory material energy, wrongly accepts himself as all in all and does not develop God consciousness. As such, the false sense of egoism, namely myself and mine, thinking that everything is mine, my powers, thinking this body is mine, has become, because people do not acknowledge that their position, whatever they have, comes from God, this sense of egoism and me and mine and I am the center has become overly prominent in the world. And there is a hard struggle for existence in human society. The intelligent class of men, therefore, must admit the Lord is the ultimate source of all energies. And thus, they should pay tribute to the Lord for his good blessings. Simply by accepting the Lord as the supreme proprietor of everything, since he is actually so, one can achieve the highest perfection of life. Whatever a person may be in the estimation of the social order of things, if a person tries to reciprocate a loving feeling towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is satisfied with the blessings of the Lord, he will at once feel the highest peace of mind for which he is hankering. Life after life. Peace of mind, or in other words, the healthy state of mind, can be achieved only when the mind is situated in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The parts and parcels of the Lord, the living entities, everyone, they are endowed with specific powers. Everyone has a specific opulence, abilities, potencies, individual abilities to do things. Some have very big powers and some have little powers, but everyone compared to Krishna only has little powers. So if one with loving devotion uses whatever power Krishna has given to him according to what one desires and deserves with affection in the service of Krishna, then he becomes happy. The parts and parcels of the Lord are endowed with specific powers for rendering service unto the Lord, just as a big business magnate's sons are empowered with specific powers for administration. The obedient son of the Father never goes against the will of the Father, and therefore passes life very peacefully in concurrence with the head of the family, the Father. Similarly, the Lord being the Father, all living beings should fully and satisfactorily discharge the duty and will of the Father as faithful sons. This very mentality will at once bring peace and prosperity to human society. So that was Prabhupada's comment on one of the verses. And then here's another one that was interesting. The relationship between that which is in the material world and the universal form. Thus the forward steps of the Lord are the shelter for the upper, lower, and heavenly planets, as well as for all we need. His lotus feet serve as protection from all kinds of fear. Fear is practically the main pushing element in this world. Everyone is afraid of this, that. Everyone knows their own personal, individual fears. Ultimately, everyone is afraid of death. But people are afraid of getting embarrassed. People are afraid of losing their money, their position. They're afraid of someone chastising them. They're afraid of people finding out things about them. Of our activities in one form or another. So here's what Prabhupada explains in his in a comment on what the verse said, that the lotus feet of the universal form serve as protection from all kinds of fear. Prabhupada's purport. For absolute protection from all sorts of fear, as well as for all our needs of life, we must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Not only in this planet, but also in the upper, lower, heavenly planets, whatever our situation is. This absolute dependence on the lotus feet of the Lord is called pure devotional service, and it is directly hinted at within this passage. No one should have any kind of doubt in this matter, nor should one be inclined to seek the help of any other demigod, because all of them are dependent on Him, the Lord, only. Everyone except the Lord Himself is dependent on the mercy of the Lord. Even the all-pervading Supersoul is also dependent on the supreme aspect of Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. So one by one, Brahma explains to, he's talking to Narada, how everything is situated on the universal form of the Lord. The back of the Lord is the place for all kinds of frustration and ignorance, as well as for immorality. From his veins flow the great rivers and rivulets, and on his bones are stacked the great mountains. Then he describes the impersonal feature is also on the Lord. The consciousness is also all consciousness. Even false ego is situated on the Lord. So in these first 12 verses of this chapter, of the sixth chapter, it describes how everything in existence is situated on this universal form. Now the chapter moves into a different mode, and it explains something quite different. First it explains, Brahma explains, myself and all the demigods, everything that exists practically, they are all covered by the universal form of the Lord at all times, past, present, and future. Although He, the Lord, is transcendental to all of them, eternally existing in a form not exceeding 9 inches. In other words, this universal form, the entirety of the universe, is resting upon the potency of the Supersoul who is within everyone's heart. So how potent is Krishna regardless of his size? Because his body is composed of Satchidananda, of all knowledge, all bliss, and all existence. So everything exists on this Lord. The sun illuminates both internally and externally by expanding its radiation. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by expanding his universal form, maintains everything in creation, both internally and externally. In other words, everything that exists, here is the purpose of this chapter, and this is the purpose of the Purusha Sukta, and this is what it is confirming, that everything that exists, as the sun is providing the heat and light throughout the world, everything that exists is being maintained by the potency of the Lord. He is the controller. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the controller of immortality and fearlessness, and he is transcendental to death and the fruit of actions of this world. O Narada, O Brahmana, it is therefore difficult to measure the glories of the Supreme Person. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is to be known as the supreme reservoir of all material opulence by the 1/4 of his energy in which all living entities exist. So this was also in the Purusha Sukta, how the Lord is the Lord of the 1/4 of this material world. And this is just, the entirety of the material world is just a small, mama angsa teja sambhava, just a small percentage of his potency. Deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from all anxieties of old age and disease exist in the kingdom of God, which is beyond the 3 higher planetary systems and beyond the material covering. So he's also the Lord of the spiritual world, the eternal world. This world is always shifting and temporary. The living entities are placed in this world really to learn required lessons so that they can get out of this world. And in text 20, the spiritual world, which consists of 3/4 of the Lord's energy, is situated beyond this material world, and it is especially meant for those who will never be reborn. Others who are attached to family life and who do not strictly follow celibacy vows must live within the 3 material worlds. Now we're going to read a little of Prabhupada's purport and hear a tape. A very interesting tape of Prabhupada speaking at 26 Second Avenue in 1966, where Prabhupada, very interesting hearing him preach in this mood. But anyway, Prabhupada explains in the purport here, the purpose of Vanashrama is to gradually elevate the living entity so he can be detached from sex life, because sex life attaches one to the mood of being the enjoyer in this world. And as long as we have the mood of this world is meant for my enjoyment, as long as we are attached to enjoying in the material world, we will never leave it. And sex life are the bars in this material world, and these bars are so gloriously put together that no one wants to leave because of the momentary pleasures. No one wants to leave the material world, and therefore so attached to the material world, and especially attached to the material body, which is the source of the pleasure of the material world. And what is the basis of the material body? This is illusion. Our attachment to the material body, our identification with the material body, this is called false ego, ahankara. This is illusion. So, Prabhupada explains, human civilization in which there is no control of sex life is a 4th-class civilization, because in such an atmosphere there is no liberation of the soul encaged in the material body. Birth, death, old age, and disease are related to the material body, and they have nothing to to do with the spirit soul. But as long as the bodily attachment for sensual enjoyment is encouraged, the individual spirit soul is forced to continue the repetition of birth and death on account of the material body, which is compared to garments subjected to the laws of deterioration. We are so attached to the body, although we are eternal. We're so attached to the body, and therefore as the body deteriorates, we have to suffer. And ultimately, the body will die, and we, the eternal soul, have to experience death, even though we are eternal. So therefore, based on this false ego, based on this false identification with the material body, we have to suffer so much. So identifying with something that is not us, that is not actually us, we can say that everyone who identifies with the body, which is not us, that is craziness. And that's what Prabhupada talks about. Let me put on the tape, whoever wants that operated.
Those who do not like it, they say, we are crazy fellows, we are afraid of crazy fellows. And similarly, we call others who do not associate with us, they are crazy fellows. So, then, we have a little pamphlet, look like, who is crazy? Now, who is that? You are thinking, the family and the party, they are crazy. And we are thinking, those who are materially engaged, they are crazy. Now to decide. Can you suggest any way how to decide it? How, who is crazy? Who is decide? Everyone, since the two parties, when there is something, the disagreement, the two parties say that you are in wrong, the other party will say you are. Then who is decide? That who is wrong? Can you suggest any one of you who is inside? The world is going on in partyism, and each opposite party is thinking that the other party is crazy. Now who is inside? Who is actually crazy? Then you have come to me point and reason. Who is crazy? But let's see, take any common man, not yourself, not myself, any common man. If you ask him that what you are, he will say his conception is that I am his birth. Everyone will say. He will give you some description that I am Christian, I am Hindu, or I am Mr. Such and Such. And this is second such, everything, whatever he or she will say, that is all due to this body. All due to this body. When you say you are American, that means this is this body, because by accident, by something, by some reason, you are born in this land of America. That is also another artificial. The land is neither America nor India. The land is land. But we give some designation. This is America. We make some boundary. This is United States of America. This is Canada. This is Europe. And this is Asia. This is India. So this is our name. But actually, was there any history that the land is American? Say, 400 years before, or 500 years before, was this land as known as America? He has named it America. Say, some thousands of years before, was this land, and the continent which is known as Europe, can you trace out history that it was known as Europe? They are all designations. Just like we can say, from historical point of view, a Vedic literature, this whole world was known as Ilavati Varsha. Ilavati Varsha. And later on, since the reign of one great king, emperor, his name was Bharat, and he changed the name into his own name, Bharatvarsha. So this whole planet was now Bharatvarsha. Then, as the days go on, and some part of this world was, separated from the original Bharatvarsha, and it was called Europe, or some other place. Just like we have got practical experience even in this age, that India, say about 20 years before, the area of India was including Burma, Ceylon, and the modern Pakistan and everything. Now it is separated. Now they are calling this is Pakistan. And somebody is calling that is Ceylon. So this process is going on. Actually, the land is neither Bharatvarsha nor Asia nor America nor India, but we give this name. About that, with the change of time, with the change of influence, they are all designations. 50 years before, when some of you, of course, all of you, 50 years old, say 40 years before, or 35 years before, when you were, or 25 years before, when you were not born, can you say what was the designation? When American or Indian or Chinese or Russian, can you say? See, after getting out of this body, do you think that you continue as American or Indian or Chinese or Russian? Suppose you are now in America, in the land of America. The next life you may be in China. Who can say? Because you are changing your body. You cannot say that we are not changing our body. Can you say that you are not changing your body? Yes, you are changing. When I was born from the mother's womb, my body was so little. Now how I have changed my body? Where is that body? Where is that body when I was a child? Where is that body when I was born? Where is that body when I was young man? I got my photograph. My students say, oh, some individual like this. Where is that one? Where is that one? So, we are changing, but I am the same man. I am thinking, in my childhood I was doing like this. Oh, in my youthhood I was thinking like this. In my boyhood I did so many things. Now, where those days are gone? In my body, everything has gone up. It simply remembers. But still, we are sticking to this body. And when I ask when you ask me what you are, I say something in relationship with this body. Are you not crazy? Can you tell any of you that you are not crazy? If you, so far your identification is concerned, if you identify with something which you are not, then are you not crazy? Are you not crazy? Say, everyone who identifies with this body is a crazy man. He's a crazy man. It is a challenge to the world. Anyone who claims God's property, God's land, God's earth, as own property is a crazy man. This is a challenge. Let anyone tell you that this is his property, this is his body. You are simply, by nature, you are, by the tricks of nature, you are put into some place, you are put under some body, you are put under some consciousness, and you are dictated by the laws of nature, and you are mad after that. So everyone, Panita Kimani, Bhinkamani, Sarvasa, अहंकार गुरा का करता हम इति मन्नत वही तो क्यों मान है एवरी वन इज बीइंग पुल बाय दी ईयर जस्ट लाइक ए टीचर टेक टू पुल द ईयर ऑफ ए स्टूडेंट दैट लाइक दिस सिमिलरली वी एवरी वन ऑफ अस अंडर द कंप्लीट क्लासेस ऑफ द मेटीरियल नेचर एंड वी आर बीइंग पुल sometimes this body, sometimes that body. Now, fortunately, you have got humans on the body. Oh, but don't you see? There are so many bodies. So many bodies. There are 8,400,000 subbodies. And by the laws of nature, by the tricks of nature, you can be put into any kind of body according to your will. So you are complete in the grip of nature. This time, fortunately and unfortunately, I got this human form of life. But next time, I may get the body of a dog or the body of a god. That will depend on my will. But the laws of nature is working. The laws of nature or the material nature is forcing me that you accept it. You cannot say, oh, that after my death, let me have my birth in America. Oh, how can you say? You are not authority. You are not authority. So this is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. But it is Kivanani, Bhuinkarmani Sarvasa, Ahankar Vimurapa Katta Aham Niti Mannate. Everything is being conducted by the supreme laws of nature, but the foolish man thinks that I am something, I am independent. This is foolishness. Ahankara vimura atma. Ahankara is false egoism. Ahankara means false egoism. What is that false egoism? That I am not this body and I think I am this body. This is called false egoism.
So that false ego connects us, eternal souls, to a material body based on our desire to enjoy. And we become so enwrapped in that that we forget the rest of existence. We forget how tiny we are. We forget how insignificant we are. We forget how everything is connected to Krishna. So here, we're hearing how everything is connected to Krishna, how Krishna is great with just one tiny fragment of his energy. The entire universe is expanded. And we are completely dependent upon him in every way, for everything. And this energy of Krishna's that manifests the material world is just one small part of his energy, and there's an entire spiritual world that if we break our identification with the material body and awaken our consciousness that we are Krishna's servant, and we can go there eternally. That is ultimately the message that Lord Brahma is giving Narada. Okay, why don't we stop here? Thank you very much. Very technical subject matter about the creation of the universe. And thank you very much for your attentiveness and listening. And wasn't it wonderful to hear Prabhupada preach in such a fired up fashion? Challenge. He said, this is our challenge to the world. You're going crazy. Anyone who identifies with the body, who thinks that this body is theirs, who thinks this world is theirs, who thinks this country is theirs, this is all illusion. This is insanity. And yet we tend to be all caught up in that very illusion and insanity. So how to get out? We hear the Bhagavatam. We hear how everything is connected to Krishna. We hear how to use everything in Krishna's service. We hear of how great Krishna is. Become dependent upon Him instead of on our own very meager power, which is given by the Lord anyway, and try to offer Him whatever we can. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
I just missed a little in the beginning. What is the source of creation of Mahatattva? Where from it has come?
It's compared to like a cloud that somehow or another comes to rest on one part of the Brahma Jyoti. Ultimately, one can say it's coming from the Ichcha Shakti of the Lord. It's coming from the desire of the Lord. It is really just a something manifested from. It is one of the energies of the Lord. This is it's the material energy of the Lord, basically, that rests upon the Brahma Jyoti. So it's a part of it's the Maya Shakti of the Lord.
So it's the Lord, in other words.
It's His energy, not the Lord.
Even energies are sort of,
sort of. They're His energy, so they are the Lord's, but they are not the Lord. Mm-hmm. They are not different from Him, but they are not Him. So this is the Maya Shakti of the Lord. This is, we could say, it's the Upadan Karan, or the ingrediential cause. Everything, all the ingredients are in there in an undifferentiated form.
So all the living entities are there.
After the Lord glances at the material nature, at the Mahatattva, and puts them there, then they are there. Otherwise, they wound up in His body.
Yes. And what about the desires of the living entity at that particular time?
Yes. Yeah. They're suspended for some time, but they're there in the covering or seed form when they are sleeping, so to speak.
So that means they have been there before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is not talking about how they are put there originally, because this is cyclical.
Sure, it's a sort of growing.
Yeah, this happens quite often in the.
So we can't really say what is the origin of them in the first place, whether there was a first time or not at all.
We can say that basically it's been going on forever. Anadi Bahimukh. Yeah. Since time immemorial.
Doesn't say much.
It's very, very, it's so long that no one can trace out the beginning. It's impossible to understand. Because our concept is grounded in material time. And this has nothing to do with that.
And material intelligence, that the way we think is that there is a cause for everything, and there's a beginning and there's an end.
So with vision, with our material glasses, and therefore it can't really be worked out.
So we should accept that as well, we don't know the end.
Well, I accept that. We cannot, even if we know, our knowing is just on the superficial level, we can't realize it, because we ourselves are in the realm of matter, and this doesn't have anything to do with the realm of matter.
Maybe when we get out of the realm of matter, we might get a better idea.
But at that time we won't care as much. We'll have a better idea still. Of many better ideas.
Where do the demigods exist before there is any existence of anything?
Well, the living entities, and they are created by the when the mode of goodness combines with false ego.
It's the same that I was asking. It's a continuation of the same living entity.
They're living entities.
The bodies are created?
They seem to exist. It seems to me, if I was organizing this, what I would do, they don't exist in a gross form yet, because the gross forms aren't there. This is what it seems. They exist in a non-gross form, and then they're placed on the universal form. Something like that. And the demigods. Yeah, this goes beyond my. Well, it's probably not inconceivable, but it is to me. Some people may be able to conceive it, but this is my understanding. They have a more subtle existence at first, because they've not yet. See, Brahma hasn't been born yet. It seems, because the creation has been stopped. So they're waiting for Brahma. They're all the living entities are sleeping and waiting for the birth of Brahma. So at some point, the demigods pray. So it must be on some more subtle form, and this is before the universal form is manifested. So it's quite primal. And then when Lord Brahma is born, then it goes into a different phase. Are you going to answer these questions? What do you do if if this is all hard for you to understand? Yes.
They're all equal in the spiritual world. How did they decide? How do they grade us into what type of bodies that we'll get?
In the spiritual world?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's an easy one. You want to hear the answer? No, it's we have a spiritual body, but it's unmanifest. The soul is naturally has a form, and right now it's like a seed. So this is us. We have an actual identity, a spiritual identity. So it's not they grade us. You know, and say, okay, this one, you go there, and let's line us up in size places or in alphabetical order or something like that, and you go here. No, this is us, our individuality. So as it manifests, which is also synonymous with our desire, it will manifest as our desire to serve Krishna. It's sort of, more or less, our spiritual body, our spiritual form, is a manifestation of our desire to serve Krishna. So however we desire to serve Krishna, our form is manifest in that way, but that desire is also naturally a product of what we are. And I said that was an easy one. Okay. Is that clear?
Yeah, but you reversed it.
I did.
I was
did
saying
I?
When we came down here, but you're saying when we go back there.
But this is what we are even now, but now we've forgotten it. It's compacted up due to the coverings of false ego, etc., which come due to our ignorance, which comes due to our desire turning our back on God. So the first step is we turn towards Him, and as we turn towards Him, and as we cleanse the material desires from our heart like that, then the spiritual desires manifest. And as that develops, naturally, even a spiritual body will develop, in a high stage. That's our actual identity. Did I reverse it again?
You sort of answered it.
What? Okay, what was the question?
You gave a nice answer to a different question.
Oh, okay. Then could you either change your question to suit my answer or ask it again?
When we're all going to fall down into the material world,
but
they decide where we're
going to go.
Are we going to go to the holy space, or the demigods, or
how do you get a Chaitanya body, etc. like that? Well, when we're all. Oh, I see what you mean. How do they decide?
How does he decide?
Well, in one place in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says the first birth of living entity takes is Lord Brahma. It says that in one place in the Bhagavatam, in one purport.
Where do we go down from there?
Well, there's nowhere else to go except down. because goodness tends to everything, because when goodness causes happiness and happiness causes attachment to the happiness, which that means passion, and then passion causes ignorant bewilderment, ignorance. So naturally one tends to go down unless one works hard to go up.
How many dhammas make up in there?
Too many. Too many. Yeah.
If the Lord is Pavitram, so then to approach him, the other means he has to be pure. So.
Yes.
So when all of the things are wound up, also, so he doesn't contact material, anything material. That's why when he glances, and Shambhu carries his glance.
Yes.
So, but when we are wound up in the body of Mahavishnu, then we still carry our desires.
Seems like the, it says by his glance, that's, we read that yesterday, that they're all put in there at that time. So exactly how that works and exact answer to your question, I cannot say.
Somebody asked, the demigods praying before creation, I've heard it said Bhamsamhita refers to eternal spiritual demigods.
Yeah, that's there too.
And they're always manifest, so it's not somehow or other the unmanifest material demigods are praying.
But I don't know if those exist in the material world. I don't.
Well,
it doesn't seem like it.
That's how I heard it explained. Anyway.
That particular question.
The demigods praying before creation is actually, it's not the material demigods. It's the spiritual demigods.
It doesn't quite seem to fit for me, but I can't really say.
That means that they were already
there. They exist in the spirit. There are demigods in the spiritual world that the material demigods are like a reflection of. Mm-hmm. But whether those are, I don't see why they would be praying to create the material world though if they're in the spiritual world. Because they don't have any. But I don't know. I really can't say. Yeah.
Just the point on time. When I think of time in this material world, I can think of looking at a clock going around, or think of what time is like in a dream, and it's like strange there. But I think of music, and you're hearing the music, and it's like a clock. It's like the same as time, music, material time.
So music precedes by the time, the beat and measure.
Yes, that's what makes it.
Yeah.
So how, if music in its original form is in the spiritual world, how is it perceived differently?
How does music work?
And other things too. That's just one.
Yeah. Right. So you're asking what's it like in the spiritual world, because there is no past, present, and future in the spiritual world. In the same way, there's no limitation. Time is not a limitation in the spiritual world, but rather it serves the purpose of the Lord. Here it dictates what happens, but there it works differently. So exactly, I mean, asking questions exactly what it's like in the spiritual world on that level are more difficult to answer than how does the creation work? So there is music, but the point being that the limitation isn't there of time. Time in the material world dictates how things work, but in the spiritual world, again, past, present, and future, there is a sense of past for sure. There's a sense of future for sure, but these are used wonderfully for the pleasure of Krishna and the devotees.
Time here destroys everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's not that there is no time, but it just doesn't work the same way it works in the material world.
It's increasing, isn't it? Everything's increasing there.
Yeah, everything is increasing there.
Is it like immeasurable then?
Yeah, it's immeasurable. It's not calculatable It doesn't fit into our finite brains. Time is, it serves Krishna there. And it serves the increase in immeasurableness of the pleasure of the pastimes. Yeah. Well, sometimes the terms are used interchangeably, but the easiest, as sometimes is explained, and the way that I find that the easiest to explain is that pradhan is the primal energy, which is the undifferentiated modes of material nature. Everything there is, it's like the cloud that's before the glance of the Lord is put in it. That is pradhan. And then after the glance is in, which includes the time factor and the living entities, then the modes of material nature are differentiated and the creation more or less begins. That's called Mahatattva. So Lord Kapila explains it like this in the third canto on the 26th chapter. Yeah. You can check in the 26th chapter how it's described. But pradhan means the first, the primal. Yes, Hare Krishna.
In the translation of the Bhujitika,
yes,
you're reading about the Lord entering with Kali.
Time. But he himself enters the universe as Gaudakshaya Vishnu.
Because you don't normally associate Vishnu with
Kali. Was that
there?
Time is the Shakti of the Paramatma. It's an energy of the Paramatma. Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's one of the aspects. It's actually explained in one of the purports that it's one of the features. Because who is the goddess Kali? She's the destructive feature. She destroys everything and everyone. That's ultimately that's time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think there's one of the purports that explain that. Okay, tomorrow we'll continue. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.